Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. We have a very informative and loaded first segment for this episode. We'll be talking about the financial aid process for attending and affording college. We have several guest students and a parent of one of the students talk about their process and their journey. Then, for segment two, we'll continue with our adventure story, Legends of the Yucatan, part 7 of a 10-part story. But first, let's kick things off with our quote of the day and hear some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from Chase Spivey, an American author, a scholarship coach, and a social worker. She's quoted to have said, "Education changes lives and scholarships makes it affordable." The quote highlights the transformative power of education and the critical role of scholarships that plays in making it accessible. By acknowledging that education can be a life-changing force, the quote emphasizes the importance of financial aid in bridging the gap between potential and achievement. Scholarships are framed not just as financial tools, but as enablers that opens doors for individuals who may otherwise be excluded due to economic barriers. The simplicity and positivity of the quote reinforce its message, serving as both motivation for students seeking aid and recognition of the essential support that scholarships provide. And that's our call of the day. Now onto some headline news with Mia.
Thank you for our quote of the day, Frank. For today's headline news, here are some big scholarship opportunities in top universities in the US, Thailand, and the UK. To start off, we have Harvard. Starting in the 2025 to 2026 academic year, Harvard will offer free tuition to undergraduate students from families earning $200,000 or less annually. Additionally, students from families making $100,000 or less will have all billed expenses covered. That includes tuition, housing, meals, health insurance, and travel costs. This initiative aims to make Harvard more accessible to a broader range of students. Next off, Chulalongkorn University in the heart of Bangkok is offering fully funded scholarships for international students to pursue master's and PhD degrees in various disciplines. The scholarships cover tuition fees, living expenses, and other academic costs. The application deadline is May 8, 2025, so hurry up if you're interested. Finally, the University of Westminster, in collaboration with the UK government's GREAT, or Great Britain Campaign, and the British Council, is offering a £10,000 scholarship towards tuition fees for a one-year master's program, starting in September 2025. This scholarship is specifically available to students from Thailand. The application deadline is June 23, 2025. And that ends our headline news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote and headline news. In this first segment, we'll be talking about how to pay for college. This is a big issue for parents and students. And let's face it, it's expensive. Financial aid process for attending and affording college is a big deal. We'll have one of our very own podcast team members, Premi, and her father on for this segment to discuss their journey and give an overview and advice on how to afford a college education in the United States. We'll also hear briefly from a few other students about their experience with colleges outside the United States and what their journey looked like. Okay, Premi, go ahead and get us started with this first segment.
Thank you so much. I'm Premi, and I've been on the team for the past two seasons. The first season, or season two, I was a co-host and a writer, and on this season, I am the production team leader. And I'm so excited to be talking about this today, and just speaking on the podcast feels like home. It is nostalgic and I love it. And in terms of university, I have always wanted to pursue an English major as well as like maybe like an ethics, politics, economics, or also a women's gender sexualities minor. And in terms of looking ahead for university, I've always wanted to study in the United States. And so a lot of my target universities was just looking into a liberal arts college that could offer this interdisciplinary like area and study, and also like a more smaller focused in liberal arts college that I feel like I would fit in the culture and also just everything else. And in terms of affording college, I do have like a more complicated financial situation, which we will definitely get into. And I will be sharing everything that I've learned over the past 2 years. And today I have my dad joining us. And if you can introduce yourself really quickly, Dad.
Sure. My name is Paul, Premier's dad. Yes, the decision of attending and affording college for a student is very much a decision that often helpful. When you share with support system, family, it is important to get all financial components of the college application process as well. We need all both personal financial data and your company data if you own your business.
Thank you, Dad. And I think just a quick breakdown for like mind map, and this is specifically for affording colleges in the US, and just like as a brief like just disclaimer, I think this process is going to look different for everyone depending on so many different factors such as citizenship, financial need, strength of profile, and like family circumstances and complexities. So to start off with, like, this is the breakdown mind map that I'll go to. First of all, the question is, do you need financial aid? Is your family, do you have means to support approximately $400,000 for a private institution in the US for a bachelor's degree? If the answer is no, you don't need that, then you're good to go. And what you would have to do is apply and get in, and you'd be able to go. For those folks that would need financial support, the first question is if you are a United States citizen or eligible permanent resident. If you are, then make sure you apply to federal aid and institutional aid. And this next question of yes, if you are a citizen, for the next question is if you believe that you feel that you have a strong enough applicant profile. If you do, then go for top 20s, go for Ivy League universities, because those universities will meet your 100% demonstrated need-based aid. And it would be great for you to apply to a lot of the merit scholarships offered at T20s as well. And the next question after that is if you, one, need financial aid, two, you are a citizen or eligible permanent resident, three, have a great or strong enough applicant portfolio. And the last question is if you have, the typical family circumstances. If you do, then you will meet 100% demonstrated need. But if you do not, and that is where my personal situation falls into, then your situation would be either the merit scholarships that you may have received, or maybe taking out loans, or financing your college education in other ways. And then outside of that, if you do not, if for US citizens, if you do not have a strong portfolio, I would recommend to find colleges, local colleges or state colleges, community colleges, as well as just taking advantage of any in-state privileges or benefits that you may have in getting in, as well as affording it. And for international students, if you do have a great portfolio, then I would recommend doing the same because some very few universities and colleges, but some would take 100% demonstrated need for both international and domestic students. So look out for those and look out for merit scholarships as well. And the last thing I'll say for international students is also make sure that you explore all other options in Asia and in Europe, in Canada, Australia, and know that the US is not your only location for college and a college education.
Yes, as we are the parent, if you come from Thai family, you can provide data from revenue department from Thai, like Pong or Dokao Sun, like this. You can translate in English, that's acceptable. And moreover, you can prepare like a financial data from your bank or your bank statement to support your financial, to prove that your kid need fund aid. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And one quick note before we get started, I know I gave that brief overview, but to make sure that a lot of this will be understood and understood easily, I do want to say that the other part is going to be equality, as mentioned before, the different factors, right? Some people don't need financial aid. Some students are US citizens. Some students have residency. Some students are first generation and low income. And there's also so many different indirect factors like race or ethnicity or passport that might make the process easier or more difficult for some. But I think the bottom line through all of it is just to know that it is hard, and it is hard to compare when other students you feel might have it easier than you in the college apps process, but just persevere and everything will turn out okay in the end. And also the other note is I try to be as comprehensive as possible as a team in this episode to cover as many things as we can that would be helpful, but I would apologize beforehand for missing any other possible avenues for a foreign college or not being considerate of other factors or circumstances that aren't personal to me. I think throughout this episode, you'll see that we talk about like situations for divorced families a lot, and that is because it is a factor that's personal to me. So it's something that I always have to keep into account. But for different factors that I might not have had to, I would apologize beforehand for not having been able to do that. That said, we can start with a more detailed breakdown of all the different ways that you can, depending on so many factors that you can do to finance your college education. Mr. Jason, could you tell our listeners about institutional scholarships?
Sure. The first type is institutional scholarships, like Premi said. These are scholarships or grants that colleges and universities offer themselves, and they're usually based on either financial need or academic merit. In most cases, institutional aid is where you're going to get the biggest chunk of help when it comes to paying for college. And then the next type is called needs-based institutional scholarships. This means that the aid you receive directly from the university is based on factors such as parents' income, parents' assets like cash, savings, home equity, real estate, and investments. Family size, number of children attending college, students' expected income from summer and term time jobs, and students' assets and more. So there's a lot of different variety of things that go into this needs-based institutional scholarships, which means you got to do a lot of homework before you apply for these.
Thank you, Mr. Jason. That's right. For the majority of universities in the U.S., most don't have capacity for offer 100% need. Instead, many universities offer a mix of the need-based aid and merit-based aid, with amount varying depending on applicant profile, citizenship status. For the most prestigious and selective university, instead, in order to ensure your students are able to attend if accepted, offer what it's called 100% need. In our case, for Duke or Yale, they only provide us financial need, right? Some university, they consider only my data because I'm a custodian parent, but some university need both custodian parent and non-custodian need. Like a primary mother, she worked in the US, so we need to send them form 1065, form 1012, for K2W2 also. Here's how it works. College look at your total cost of attendance or COA. That's tuition, room, book, boards, anything else. Subtract what they think your family can reasonably contribute. They call EFC. And whatsoever left is your demonstrated need. They will cover 100% of that need. That's formula. COA minus EFC equal your aid. It's often the math breakdown. Example, if your COA is 100K, right? But if you prove that your family EFC only 50K, so they provide support you only 50K, right? In our case, some colleagues do not support on the basis the revenue because premier mother, she worked in the U.S., right, because she got a personal revenue and her company revenue also. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dad. And yes, and thank you, Mr. Jason. That is essentially how institutional scholarships, especially and particularly need-based institutional scholarships work. And to dive into that, in order to qualify for this need-based institutional scholarships, you'd have to fill out the CSS profile, which also stands for the College Scholarship Service Profile. And this application is through College Board, and I think most students will be already familiar with College Board through registering for the SAT, the AP exams, and more. And this CSS profile is over 200 questions. And I can say that, like, my father and I, like, we sat down for, like, several Sundays to, like, make sure that everything is filled out. And again, as mentioned, it takes parents' income, parents' assets like cash, savings, home equity, family size, number of children, students' expected income, assets, and more. And also, I think siblings, I remember like one particular section was particularly comprehensive because I have 4 younger siblings and we had to list out all their names, all their ages, all their education. And for each sibling, we had to list out their previous or like last year's tuition and all expenses, current year tuition and all expenses, and future tuition and expenses for like 5 different times for all of us. So that was particularly like labor intensive. And essentially, the CSS profile is an online application used by colleges' scholarship programs toward non-federal institutional aid and internationals. For international students, the CSS profile automatically converts Thai baht to US dollars.
Yes, that is maybe an add-on that because the Thai baht and dollar is fluctuate, then a fixed exchange rate. So we don't know yet that how many Thai baht we could convert to the tuition in dollars. That's one thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one thing. I think when we did it, we just chose like a standard like unit of conversion. We stuck with that, even though it did fluctuate. I think for international or like parents making income from internationally to afford a college education in the U.S., it's also important to remember like the purchasing power will be definitely different, and sometimes it is taken into account and sometimes it is not. And a note on divorced or separated parents. You would have to make a separate profile for your non-custodial parent. And by that means you need to create a whole other College Board account. And that process was a bit confusing to me. So like to put it out there, that is what you need to do. And the other thing is the CSS profile for non-custodial parent fee waivers. And this is for maybe divorced or separated parents, but you do not have contact. Or there are certain factors, like you don't have contact or you have never received any support from your non-custodial parent, or there have been legal orders that restrict you from contacting your non-custodial parent, or the other way around, or abuse situations involving you and the non-custodial parent. And in that case, supporting documents would be helpful. For instance, court documents, legal orders, if acceptable, as well as third-party documentation, like a written statement or a letter from a counselor, social worker, teacher, or clergy who has firsthand knowledge about and can certify your situation. That is particularly important for divorced families with like a non-custodial parent that might be out of the picture. And the other factor I will say is willingness to pay or refusing to complete the CSS profile or a divorce decree. These factors are more subjective and will be up to the institution. But willingness to pay, I can say, will mostly not be accepted. And in situations like this, for instance, your parents have set out a budget for $20,000 a year for your college education. But in reality, their numbers, their tax forms, their W-2s show that they can pay more than that. And that willingness to pay as a factor will not be accepted. And ultimately, each institution would make its own decision in regards to the non-custodial parent fee waiver and would reach out if more information is required. And the submission of the waiver does not guarantee if it will be accepted. And I think just like a quick little part that I find ironic sometimes is that in order to apply and qualify for institutional aid, you would need to pay for this application. And it is as of current 2025, it is $25 for the initial application, and it is $16 for each college profile you send up to them. And additionally, for that non-custodial separate CSS profile, it is $25 as well. And it is, when it adds up, if you apply to 20 colleges, it adds up really quickly in addition to the application fee itself. And to also put it out there, there are certain fee waivers available for both parts. So if you might qualify, make sure you reach out and make sure that you would receive that aid.
All right, so that is a great explanation, and there's a lot of great detail in there. And Premi is the first one in her family that's going through this process. She has 4 younger siblings, and so she's kind of blazing the trail for their family. So, I mean, this is so many details if you want to go to a college in the United States and you're looking for financial aid. So you can always reach out to someone who's gone before you. So Premi's kind of blazing the trail in her family and they're figuring this out, but there's lots of information that needs to be gathered. So let me jump ahead on this idea of CSS. So once you fill out the CSS, which stands for the College Scholarship Service, you might also be asked to submit supporting documents through something called the IDOC, and that's short for Institutional Documentation Service. Some colleges participate in IDOC or IDOC, while others have their own portals where you'll upload tax returns, W-2s, or other paperwork. Just be aware it takes about 3 to 5 business days for IDOC to process things after you get a code from the College Board, which can take up to a day. Remember, there's a lot of details in here. So bottom line, don't procrastinate. Missing deadlines can delay your aid or reduce how much you're offered. Always double check your college's financial aid checklist and make sure you've submitted everything. The other kind of caveat to this is these things could change year after year. So just make sure you're checking up on all those details and the deadlines as well.
Thank you, Mr. Jason. And if you are a high achievement student from the low income background, there's another awesome opportunity that you look into, like QuestBridge. This is an incredible nonprofit that provides with a partner with 55 colleges, including Leipzig, Liberal Arts School, to other food, right? House food fee and more. Some college even account your insurance set, and also some program like National College match. A student can earn admission and full 4-year scholarship with zero preferential contribution and no student loan also. Yeah. And no loan and their college prep also, right? They're fortunate. They can help you prep early, even connect you with a summer program also, mentoring and more.
Yes, that's right. And I think this goes to show that like it is especially, and I would say especially if you're applying with financial aid or for financial aid, there are so many opportunities out there, and some of them start as early as your junior year. So make sure you reach out. Make sure you don't miss out on any of these cool opportunities and resources. And QuestBridge, in particular, that you mentioned, is need-based and merit-based to have a super strong applicant profile. And you also qualify for that need-based, and it is wonderful. It is such a wonderful program, and if you qualify, definitely look into it. It is a game-changer. And to move on from this, the merit from the need-based component to more merit-based full rides, as I mentioned, especially at top 20s in the United States. So for U.S. citizens and internationals as a whole, there are many colleges that offer full ride or full tuition. And to name some, just to throw them out there so you can start doing your research and just to know that there are a vast array of possibilities. WashU has 3 signature scholarships. Rodriguez, Danforth, Irvine, they're all full tuition scholarships. Emory is a full ride scholarship, Woodruff's program. And even if you don't, if you're a finalist and you don't get the full ride scholarship, they still offer like the liberal arts college scholarships and more. And the UNC Morehead Cane is a full ride and plus 4 like fully paid summers and more. And that is similar to the UVA's Jefferson's program as well as Duke's, but Duke is a specific outside scholarship called the Robertson, and is joint with UNC and UNC Chapel Hill and Duke. Vanderbilt has 3 full tuition scholarships as well, Cornelius, Chancellor's, and the Ingram Scholarship. Rice University has 1, Boston University has a full tuition trustee scholarship and a half tuition presidential scholarship, Boston College, and so many more. And I would definitely recommend, if you are in a position to be eligible for such or need such, to search up comprehensive lists on the internet. And there are spreadsheets of all different colleges offering full rides and full scholarships. And I would also, I think a little note is also to be able to differentiate between scholarship only and scholarship programming. The scholarship only is similar to a full ride or a full tuition, where all that the scholarship entails is just a minus 100K or whatever amount it is on your cost of attendance that will be deducted from you. Whereas scholarship programming, and this is applicable for instance like UNC or WashU or UVA, Emory, these or Duke's, Robertson, these colleges would have a scholarship programming, and that means an alumni network built in, a community built in, maybe an office on campus built in. And for some scholarship programming, they will have stipends or they will have funding for all your summer experiences, and that is definitely something to look into as well and something to differentiate if you're offered many. And my piece of advice specifically for this is that most of the scholarships, merit-based scholarships, would require more essays. And a lot of this would be meeting the deadline. And this is often before your regular decision deadline in January. Most of these scholarships require you to be on your game and to apply for these as early as November. and November 1st, November 15th, November 30th, December 1st. And all these deadlines are important, because if you miss that deadline, you might not qualify for this merit-based scholarship that would have been a game changer in your college decision process. And just to do everything that you can to meet the scholarship program director, to meet and chat with current scholars and alumni, because with these scholarship programs, every little thing counts. And also, I think if you are in a position that you have received one, to be proud of yourself. It is so incredibly difficult to get a merit-based. It is so hard to get a full ride or full tuition to an institution. And I would argue that sometimes it is more difficult than just getting into like a top five or an Ivy League institutions, because there is such a selective few spots offered, and there's such competitive, and like everyone is a qualified applicant pool. And I think a note on applying RD, this is such an important goal that I think so many people miss, and it is so sad, is that you need to understand the goal and the purpose of these full rides or full tuition scholarships. The goal is for an applicant that has such a strong profile that would probably get into Ivy League institutions or Stanford, MIT, as such. And the goal of these scholarships is for top 20s like Duke, WashU, Vanderbilt, Rice, for these institutions to offer merit-based scholarship as a motivation, inspiration for those students that might have otherwise gone elsewhere to go to stay in their college for that, and kind of, in other words, investing in their potential. So if you were to have applied ED or EA to some of these colleges offering merit scholarships, they might be more reluctant to give you these scholarships if they know that you're binded to go to their institution other than another institution elsewhere. And so that is what I will say on that. So to make sure that, as with everything, understand the goal, understand the purpose, so you know how to proceed and do what is best for you. And for internationals would also say you need to watch out for the time as well, because it is important. And while a lot of merit scholarships would also offer US and international citizens, I can say from experience that the international pool is so much smaller. For instance, Emory's finalist program, there were about 150 finalists that are US citizens or domestic. But for international finalist applicants, there were only 7, or around that number. I think it is just essentially more difficult as an international student to receive these merit scholarships. And there are some that offer scholarships only for internationals. And I think a notable example is the Wesleyan Asian Freeman Scholarship for students of Asian descent, and the Wesleyan African Scholars Program. And for these scholarships, you would not be eligible if you are a U.S. citizen. So some specific caveats of scholarships to look out for. And the goal with finalist interviews, as an international student, you might not be invited just because there aren't sufficient funds for you to visit campus to have your finalist interview in person. So if it's virtual, it's definitely a different experience, and I would caution you to prepare for that very well as well. And the last thing I'll say for internationals is also, it is just essentially more difficult it is so much of college applications process is already a crapshoot. It's so difficult, and it is so hard to get into it, and it's just a game of luck essentially. And so much of this is also dependent on political climate, current political climate, or international relations with the country that you are a citizen from. So I think, or like less quotas, less spots, less seats available for internationals. So just as a goal, we see you international students, keep working hard. It is very difficult.
Okay, so thank you, Premi, for those details, especially for the students who aren't U.S. citizens. It's really important that you kind of look at some of those fine details of when you're applying and how to apply. And this idea of terms of like institutional aid, including merit-based as well as need-based. Well, moving on, there's another avenue of aid that many U.S. citizens and eligible permanent residents can seek help in, and that's federal aid. Unfortunately, international students are not eligible for this type of aid because this aid comes directly from the U.S. federal government. Federal funding is not as extensive as institutional aid, aspects include the Pell Grant, which actually I received when I was at university a long time ago. I received a small Pell Grant amount. A Pell Grant is given without the expectation that the student has to return that money back. In other words, it's simply money paid directly to the institution of your choice, which will help reduce part of that semester cost or the tuition cost. The Pell Grant amount varies from year to year. For instance, in the academic year starting in the fall, the maximum Pell awarded is around $7,300. The Pell Grant amount ranges from zero, you could get a reply back that says zero, or up to $7,300, almost $400. Additionally, federal aid can come in the form of both subsidized and unsubsidized loans, with varying interest rates and terms of repayment. The amount of the Pell Grant and the loans are determined by the Student Aid Index, or the SAI.
Thank you, Mr. Jason, for Pell Grant. You can also apply to receive federal aid through FAFSA, stand for the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. This is much shorter than CSA profile, as I did this with Premi. Also, as mentioned, it's free, so there are no costs to apply. Eviction look spiffy if your parents live together or divorce, right? In our case, for this FAFSA form, we can use only custodian parent, so they transform our revenue tied back to the U.S. to show them that we need the support from the government. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And I think it is in like different or in complex like financial situations like mine, you can see like this discrepancy in the SAI calculator and the institutional awarded. And just really quickly, I'll also make a note on outside scholarships. And these are great scholarships, mostly merit-based. And some are both need and merit-based, but a lot of them are just a mix of both. And these outside scholarships are wonderful because you can apply them directly to your institution regardless of where you go. So they are not tied to you get a scholarship at Duke. Therefore, you need to go to Duke to get the scholarship. You can use it anywhere. And unfortunately, this is limited mostly to U.S. citizens and living internationally. But mostly it is available for permanent residents or just high school students living in the U.S. and U.S. territories are eligible. And just very many scholarship search engines that I'll throw out there. College Board has Wonderful One, FastWeb, Bull.org, Scholarship, Owl, Niche, and more. And the award amount or selection criteria is very, very difficult. And a lot of these, the online scholarship services platforms are based on points. So how much you post, how much you profile, how much you engage in the... So you could argue that so much of it is not even based on need or even merit. And they're really hard to get. They're just a chance luck base. And I would say big scholarships, and these are more worthwhile to pursue, in my opinion, would be like Coca-Cola scholarships, Burger King, and the Gates scholarship. And Gates scholarship is wonderful. It is Pell eligible. It is absolutely dollar for dollar amount. So it is a full ride. Anything, any fees that you need, you can get your money back for. And there's also a junior scholarship, the Coolidge, that offers a full ride anywhere you go as well. And that is a great deal as well. And it's also say that there are also certain scholarships built in for different groups of people, like marginalized or people of color, such as like the Black Thurgood Marshall College Fund or Ron Brown Scholarship. Or there's also scholarships specifically for women, LGBTQ communities, disabilities, undocumented or DACA, DACA students, like the Dream.us. And for U.S. citizens abroad, I'll just shout out really some names really quickly. These were the ones that I was only able to apply for because many of the big scholarships are limited to citizens or just high school students living in the U.S. So for U.S. citizens living abroad, these are some scholarships you'll be eligible for. Jimmy Rain Foundation, Live Mass, that's Taco Bell Scholarship, Jackie Robinson Scholarship, Greenhouse Scholarship, GE Reagan Scholarship, Equitable Excellence Scholarship Program, BIPOC and Flagship Point Foundation, LGBTQ+ Scholarships, APIQWTC Scholarship, that's for Asians, and API scholarships is also for Asians. And the one thing I'll say is if you are a resident, make sure you look into that in-state tuition benefits and you will get a higher chance of admissions as well. And case studies, for example, to throw out there, UNC Chapel Hill and UVA, William & Mary. So many of these, the need portion and the applicant admissions portion will depending on your residency. And for appeals, I will get into appeals in a little bit. Dad, could you also talk about some other options for scholarships and honing on like scholarships with like a regional or geographical scale, especially for international students?
Sure. Thank you, Premi. Okay, in Thailand, there are many scholarships, right? But most of them, they give us only graduation, right? So we are looking for only undergraduate. We could find some scholarship like Bangcha or ACB. They pay you whole cost of living, like a free, like a full, right? But you're gonna sign a contract to work for them after you graduate, like 1.5-2 times of the time you study for. That's how it looks like. Also, be sure that to find scholarship based on your country may fund it. Instead, if you are dual citizen Thai and US living in Thailand, you may find both corporate and company scholarship, like a government scholarship. Also in Thailand, they call Gopo, right? And for those who live in the US, there are often state and local scholarship available, like Durham in North Carolina. While these scholarships are often small amount, they tend to be a lower competition, thus there are your chance. And another part is a scholarship through your parents' company. Yeah. And if you decide to take your student loan like an international student, you will be faced difficulty in the sort of you got to pay loan money from, right? And those interest of loan may often be better than borrow from college institution, federal government, banks. Now, Premi will talk about different ways to receive more aid, institution aid, please.
Yes, okay, specifically for institution aid, I know we've covered this, but this is in the case or in the event that you've done the CSS profile, you've uploaded documents either through iDoc or through your own or through your college admissions portal. You've done everything that you can and you received this financial need-based institutional award package and it's simply not enough. For some reason or the other, it doesn't fully encapsulate what your family is able to pay. And there is this process called the appeal process, or in some colleges might call a request, a review of your financial process. And essentially you submit more documents, you submit a written statement to essentially ask a request to college institution for more need-based institutional aid. And for some, I think I've done the appeal process, and just to make keep in mind, it takes time. It takes time to upload, it takes time to make sure that documents are received. You need to be sure to follow up on them and to always inquire about the financial aid appeal process, like the timeline. How long will it take? Because you might have to make your decision very soon. And I would also say, if you're able to, make sure you appeal or submit your appeal process. If you are admitted early restrictive action like Iowa's, make sure you are able to start and submit this appeal process before RD regular decisions come out, because that would be just another wave of thousands of applicants with financial need that the committee or the financial office has to look for. Okay, some quick advice on what I've observed to be successful appeals. One, you make sure to submit documents, all documents to support your points. Two, if your parents' income for the tax year, because financial aid, they look at previous tax year. For instance, I'm starting college in fall 2025. They wanted my 2023 parents' income. But if my 2024 parents' incomes are significantly lower, then include that. That will be a game changer in your appeal. And as far as I know, it is helpful to have a paragraph in your written statement that is similar to, my parents make this amount a month and we pay this amount for mortgage, this amount towards my tuition, this amount daily expenses with only this amount left in savings, and then you times 12 for that amount in a year, and you can say it with no inconceivable like way to afford like this amount that you're given for my tuition expenses at XX college. And you can also say you use a conservative estimate. And what I will say is, I think from what I've observed, if you do break down in month, the perceived value, I don't know how much that goes to help, but the perceived value might look less if you break it down in a month. And also, like in other countries like Thailand, income is primarily based like from a month anyway. And also to make sure you, again, go all out, look at previous tax forms and see which parts are factored in. Look at the college financial website, which parts are factored in, and if they've decreased, and if they have, make sure you convey that and express that properly and clearly in your appeal. As well as siblings in college, this is an also important factor. And as well as for special circumstances, this includes like medical bills, elderly care, like accidents, a death in the family, or loss of job income, etc. And to always be sure, to follow up, make sure the financial aid received all of them.
and also to book meetings with your financial aid officers. This is especially important, especially if you are assigned to one and if you are able to fly out to that university, fly out, go to their financial aid office in person and have that conversation. But if you're not able to, that's okay too. Just book a meeting and meet with them virtually. But face-to-face is always important. And finally, what I will say is so important is always be nice and polite and considerate. Because regardless of what happens, this financial aid officer, you will be in conversation with them for the next 4 years. So this is important that you're considerate and you keep a great relationship with them. And Dad, you want to say something about like how our appeal process looked like?
Sure. Premier talked about the process already. Now, after we did it already, there are some results from the university that Premier accepted. Like the first one, the Yale, right? The Yale we accepted since December, but we delayed 3-4 months waiting for her mother revenue incomes data. So we are still waiting for it. And the second one, Duke University, we just get the result from the full 98K or tuition fee to 78K after we got the data from the US. And we got a Pell Grant also. The third one, Washington University, we got a full tuition with the merit and Pell Grant also. And the fourth one, William Mary, we got from 70K to 50K, right? For tuition assistant. And you can see that's good thing that because the premier state and we got a full tuition and we finally saw more headcount also, right? And the sixth one, we got the Boston University, we got full tuition also. And seventh one, we got the Barna, right? Yeah, that's an example of the result. Yeah.
All right, thank you so much. And I will say, like, with all those results, you may see that, whoa, okay, this college is giving like full scholarship. That might be because of merit. Or like William & Mary, UNC, they only take into account custodial parents' income. And that's why I was able to get need-based aid from those institutions. And just if you go back and listen again, my financial circumstance is complicated. And that would be like the last question that I would ask. And that is just where we are at now in the journey. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And I hope that you were able to find at least some of that information useful. And I know that it was like it might be overwhelming. That is a lot of information. That is everything I've learned over the course of 2 years. So having that condensed in 40 minutes can be like really overwhelming. So stick out with me. Reach out if you have any questions about this. I'll be so happy to answer through like Students Incorporated website or email. And again, while some may have it easier than others, it can often be discouraging. But keep pushing on. Keep fighting. College education in the United States is so expensive. And because of this, we wish you the best. And now we'll be expanding the reach to the possibilities of a college education in other countries. And we'll be inviting Hiwi and Adi, who have all recently gone through this process, to share their insights and advice. Adi and Hiwi's part goes here. Continue. Thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing the insights. There's always other options. Take a gap year, work, 2-year technical trade school, community college, and then you could always transfer. And if I were to give a piece of advice to those applying and affording colleges in the US, I would ask, what do you think, Dad, from the perspective of a parent, what would be your advice?
For the important thing, you got to talk your family together and about the if you can affordable like a counselor to consult you, you can go with them. But if you cannot, you can do it by yourself. Like Premi, she could go to the Yale, Duke, whatever, without consultant, but with ICS support, that's enough. And one more thing, that don't give up, right? Do your best, and you won't look at it later. And God bless you. Okay.
Thank you so much. And I will say to that point, you have a good point. I think you are able to afford. I think I have different thoughts on the admissions process, the counseling bit, but I definitely think that having someone who is familiar with the financial aid process and the financial aspect of the college affordability aspect, that is definitely helpful. And if I were to give a piece of advice to an underclassman about to start this process or in the middle of college applications, and in particular for affording college, I would say
look out, reach out. There are so many resources, there are so many opportunities, and to never be afraid. I can share personally that for Emory, I ended up being a finalist for Emory's full ride program, and I ended up getting a 100K liberal arts college scholarship, and I submitted the application 2 days late. The deadline was November 15th. I found out about this opportunity November 17th. And it was really sad because, oh, if it were just 2 days ago, I could have submitted it. But I reached out. I emailed the admissions counselor and asked if I might still be able to submit my application, even though it was 2 days late. And that person replied back saying, okay, you have 5 hours to do it. And that's what I did. And in those 5 hours, I earned 100K. And I think it just goes to show that don't be afraid. You might be living hundreds and thousands of miles away from all these institutions, but there are means of contacting them. Reach out. Check out for deadlines. Reach out. There are so many opportunities, there are so many chances, and I know it is hard, I know it is hard, but I believe in you, you can do this, and just push forward, persevere. Everything will be okay in the end. It might not look like it, it might be so stressful and anxiety-inducing in the process, but outside, there is a light at the tunnel. You will be okay, and everything will work out. Just keep pushing and keep fighting, and support systems are so important, so make sure you lean onto those as well. Thank you so much for joining us. Could you introduce yourself and what majors or fields of study you're interested in, Adi?
So, as you said, my name is Adi, and I have an interest in medicine. So I'm planning on pursuing a career as a doctor and somewhat in like literature as well.
Oh, that's cool. Literature?
Yeah, I like journalism.
I did not know that.
Well, I applied for that first and then I had to make changes.
That's so cool. Okay, could you tell us more about your initial expectations or hopes for pursuing colleges, including like which countries with which colleges, and also where are you now on the journey of attending and affording college?
Okay, so initially I wanted to go to America to pursue a career as a doctor there, but I soon realized that it's very expensive, especially as an international Asian. Absolutely. As well as it's also really long, and it's also a gamble. Even if you finish your bachelor's, it's really hard for you to get into their med school as an international student. So that was kind of a bummer. And even when I got in a program, I still couldn't pay for it. So I had to look elsewhere. So, and I wasn't like, UK was always my second choice. That's, you know, I lived there for a while and I have a lot of family members there. So like, I'm not that sad that I'm going to the UK, but excited.
That's cool. Can you tell us like specifically, if you don't want to share, like which colleges you've been accepted to, or like which ones like do you know now for sure? Are you committed?
Yeah, I'm like 90% committed that I'm going to go to University of Dublin, but nice. I might not go there if I don't get their financial aid, which kind of depends on my AP scores. So let's hope I don't like fumble scores there. But if not, I'm probably going to go to one of the 5-3 UK schools that I've gotten in.
That's cool. Could you talk a bit about like what that aid process looks like? Like, do they meet all of your need-based aid? Or is it like merit-based?
The way the aid works is basically if I get certain fives, I'll be getting full ride.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So it is kind of like, it has some things to it. I need to keep my grades in university every year to have that aid for all 6 years. And I kind of also have to do residency there.
Okay.
So it's like, but I'm okay with that because it's a med school and I'm skipping the pre-med process. So I'm already like getting some years off. So I'm okay with that.
That's cool. That's cool. And like, would you say like as a rule, like in Europe or like in UK, you were saying like, is the process of getting aid like easier than like the States or like merit-wise? Or like how's the application like?
I think getting aid at the UK is much harder than the American.
Oh, really?
Well, to be honest, you don't get aid in med school in general. Mm-hmm. They just don't give it out. Mm-hmm. And the UK, most of the schools are very private. Mm-hmm. And they don't get government aid. So kind of makes it harder. And I don't want to be like saying like allegations, but they are kind of like, they don't want a lot of Asians here.
I see.
Like Brexit.
And would you be like an international
student? I would be an international student.
I see.
So it has some baggages to it. Mm-hmm. But there, Ireland is not part of the UK because mm-hmm. they left it. So they kind of have a nicer and more relaxed policies. And mm-hmm. they give a lot of aid, which is wonderful for me, I guess.
That's nice. Do you know what you have to decide by? Or like, is there like a form you have to fill out? Or is it like conditional acceptance?
Well, I've gotten in. Mm-hmm. It's just, this is for the aid qualification.
I see.
Which is, because I'm not doing the A levels, they kind of expect me to get more fives.
Oh, no.
So that's kind of a bummer, especially with some of my classes this year. Mm-hmm. It is kind of hard, but I think it should be sufficeable.
It's okay. You got this. We believe in you. You're going to get fives and you're going to afford college.
Sure.
And we always like to end our guest segments by asking for advice. If you could give a piece of advice to underclassmen looking to apply and afford college in like you were saying, like UK or like Europe, what would it be? And you can like be as specific as you want to be. You can talk like specific like med school or like anyone, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah. So if you want to go to med school, I would say that you start preparing for all the standardized tests in 10th grade. I know that's kind of a bummer because I know most of us probably don't know what we want to do by 10th grade, but it is the best thing you can do. Start preparing in 10th grade. And I don't know if this is like a great advice, but I would recommend everyone to get a college counselor. I never had one, and I know people had one, and it seems like it helped them a lot with this process. So I just think that would be a good thing to start with.
And would you like recommend college counselor for like admissions and financial aid, or like mostly one or the other, or like for everything?
Well,
if you're able to afford it, because
that is true.
Expensive.
Like, but yeah. Well, if you want to just get into uni, a college counselor seems to always help people in our grade. Well, a lot of people in our grade have college counselors, so
right, yeah,
it does help them. Mm-hmm. Even financial aid, it seems like it helps them, because I know friends who've gotten good financial packages with their college counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know I get that most people can't afford it, but if you can, I think it's a good thing to invest in.
Okay, thank you so much, Adi. Yep.
Thank you for having me.
And Huey, thank you so much for joining us. Could you introduce yourself and what majors or fields of study that you're interested in?
Okay, so my name is Grace, but people know me as Huey, and I applied to marketing major and film major. So, I applied to multiple universities in Korea, and I applied to different majors for each school.
That makes sense.
So mostly it's marketing and film major.
Thank you so much. And look who's on the marketing team making the best reels for us this season.
Thank you.
Could you tell us more about your initial expectations or hopes for like where you wanted to go for college, including like which countries or also like where you are now on the journey of attending and affording college?
So at first, I had like a dream of studying abroad. So I wanted to apply to like U.S. Mm-hmm. Universities. But at the end, I ended up applying to only Korean universities. Mm-hmm. And I think I suit better in Korea. And there's always an opportunity for me to study abroad whenever I want. Maybe like as an exchange student or maybe as like graduate
yeah.
program. So, yeah.
And you'll get better food in Korea too.
Yes, yes, for sure.
And we'd always like to end with our guest segments by asking them for advice. If you could give a piece of advice to underclassmen looking to apply and afford college in Korea, what would it be?
I think there will be like cultural differences, I guess. So first of all, get fluent in Korean, and also I don't know, don't be scared to try new things in Korea, because there are some like stereotypes, not gonna lie, in Korea, and that can make the people discouraged. Right. So like don't be scared of what people say or how they perceive you, and just do your own thing.
Yeah, absolutely, try new things. Thank you so much, Huey.
Thank you.
CSPC and BP Pharmaceutical Co. Limited, founded in 2003, is a leading modern pharmaceutical company in China, specializing in innovative drug production. It was the first in the country to license patented drugs internationally, with FDA standard facilities and advanced automated equipment. Its flagship product, DL3N butylfathide, is a globally recognized stroke treatment benefiting over 10 million patients and backed by nearly 40 domestic and international patents. The drug is currently in phase 3 clinical trials in the US and has received FDA orphan drug designation. The company has earned prestigious honors, including the China Industrial Award and the title of Green Factory.
Recapping part 6, The Escape. Hawthorne, Tommy, Miranda, and Ava explore El Castillo with David leading them. Two cartel members get distracted by the treasure, which proves to be fatal. The group escapes just in time while helping to save a park ranger. And without further ado, let's jump back into our story where we join our eclectic group of characters in their continuing adventure. As Professor Hawthorne squeezes through the small, rough, and rocky exit, the bright daylight meets him with a blinding intensity, just as it had with the others who made it safely out moments before him. As his eyes adjust to the light, he sees Miranda and Ava talking softly with the young park ranger. David, having helped Hawthorne out, was kneeling down next to the exit, waiting to help Tommy. Tommy appears less than a minute later and is able to exit the base of the pyramid just like the others had done. As Tommy stands up and brushes off his pants and shirt, Hawthorne asks, "Do we need to worry about the young cartel member?"
Still trying to adjust to the bright daylight, Tommy responds, "No, he was just standing there, still bent over looking into the water. His partner disappeared in the current. There was nothing any of us could have done. It's weird, but I feel terrible that we couldn't save him."
Hawthorne shakes his head in agreement and then says, "Yeah, that guy didn't have a chance once he sank into the deep part of the cenote. I grabbed their radio as I was leaving. I think there's another person out here somewhere, maybe a lookout."
David then adds, "I spotted another guy just around the corner, maybe 50 yards away from the base of the pyramid, just sitting there and waiting. And he doesn't look like the other tourists here today because he's not part of any tour group that I can tell." David changes the subject quickly and then says, "Professor Hawthorne, can you call Lily, I think that's her name, and ask her to go to the Grand Museum's reception desk at the front of the building and confirm that something was dropped off for me? We need to make sure they are giving us the jade jar back as well. Once we can confirm it, then I can give them the location of the cenote."
Hawthorne replies, "Good idea. I'll call her right now so she has time to check." Hawthorne gets on his phone, which now has a strong signal, and calls Lily. Hawthorne keeps the call short and says, "Hello, Lily. I've got to keep this call short, but could you do me a huge favor and go up to the reception desk by the front entrance and see if there was something dropped off for David Silva? I can explain later. Just text me back yes or no as soon as you find out." After hearing Lily say no problem and will do, Hawthorne hangs up and tells the others. Tommy then starts explaining the plan to all of them.
"Okay, that's great to hear from James," Tommy says, and then continues with his plan and says, "If we go around the other side of the pyramid, we can then make our way through the ball court and we can avoid being seen by other supposed lookout. And David, maybe you can try to contact whoever is on the other side of the radio. Let them know we gave them what they wanted, the secret cenote location, and make sure they think it's the cenote. Then we can get the jade jar and get your brother back." Tommy continues, "Okay, we should go back directly to the Grand Museum once we catch one of the shuttles that leaves from the main parking lot."
Miranda then says, "Okay, ball court, then to the parking lot for a shuttle back, and then back to the Grand Museum. Got it." She then adds, "The park ranger, I found out that his name is Lewis. He's coming with us as he needs to go back to the park administrative headquarters next to the museum. He said he needs to report what happened to his boss, who will then pass it along to the provincial police, who are stationed a few kilometers down the highway."
"All right, let's go, guys," Tommy says as he starts walking around the opposite side of the pyramid toward the ball court to avoid the other suspected lookout.
Hawthorne walks next to Tommy as they enter the ball court area of Chichen Itza and discuss what their next move should be. They stop talking partway through the ball court, just taking in the old ancient sports arena. It's quite impressive and the largest of its kind in Mesoamerica. The ball court measures at around 120 meters in length and about 30 meters wide. It's a large flat area with tall stone walls flanking each side of the court. Stone rings protrude from the walls toward the top of the wall. The Mayans used the court for games. In one of the games, contestants would use their hips, elbows, or knees in an effort to get a ball made of rubber through their opponent's stone ring. There were many tour groups mingling around and getting photos, which also helped the group blend in, just in case the lookout guy was walking around. As they exited the other end of the ball court and were now walking toward one of the main parking lots, the radio came alive in Hawthorne's pocket. The voice on the other end was asking for an update and what was going on. Hawthorne looked at Tommy and asked, "Should we answer it? What should we say?"
David, hearing the voice over the radio, jogged up to Hawthorne and Tommy and said, "Here, let me see the radio. I have an idea and I think it can buy us more time." David clicks the radio receiver and then speaks. "We think we found the right place. We still need some time to confirm. It looks promising. I think the plan is working." David says this into the radio and in Spanish, trying to mimic what the other cartel member sounded like. The guy had barked enough orders at them while in the cavern, so David thought he could do the guy's voice, or at least get close to it. David then clicks off the receiver and waits for a response, holding his breath and secretly hoping the guy on the other side of the radio believes it's the voice of his criminal partner. The radio crackles one, and then the voice then says, "We'll keep moving ahead. Keep us posted. Out."
It only took Lily a few minutes to walk to the reception desk at the Grand Museum. It was close to the entrance of the place, and it was close to where Lily and the other students were hanging out. There were multiple food and beverage vendors and comfortable seating areas near the reception table. The area inside the front of the museum would remind you of a combination of a food court with a local artisan craft market. On one side were the food and beverage vendors, and then on the other side were the artisan handicraft vendors. The museum's reception desk sat inside the main front doors, and on one end of the large food and craft area, the tables and chairs sprawled out throughout the middle area. There were many tourists around, shopping, eating, and resting. Lily and the students were doing the same. When Lily received the call from Professor Hawthorne, she felt like something was going on, but knew that Hawthorne couldn't explain it all to her over the phone. So she just did what he asked. She looked over at where all the students were sitting. Some were eating, some were talking with each other, and some were quiet and on their phones. She then said, "Wait here, I've got to go check on something at the reception desk for the professor, and I'll be right back." Lily got up from the table she was sitting at and started walking toward the reception desk, which was on the opposite end of where they were all sitting.
Carlos, who was just sitting there by himself, minding his own business, he had chosen a table that was close to both one of the popular food vendors and near the reception desk. He had a clear line of sight of the reception desk with the food vendor sitting just to his right side, close enough that he could smell the fresh street tacos being made. He was definitely going to get some as soon as he had a chance. He was also playing one of his favorite games on his phone while waiting. He loved football, or what the Americans call soccer, and he secretly wished he could have been a better football player. If that would have been the case, then he wouldn't have to be doing this type of work. Anyway, Carlos just sat there, distracted by his video game and the smell of fresh street tacos being made next to him. He had to keep reminding himself to keep an eye on the reception desk to see if anyone comes and picks up the black bag Renata had placed there earlier. He sees a text message come through. It's from his Aunt Maria and reads, "Give me an update. Has anyone picked up the bag yet?" Carlos texts back quickly, slightly annoyed that the text message interrupted his video game playing, and he texts back, "No, nothing yet."
As Lily weaved her way through all the tables and chairs, having left the students just a short 2 minutes prior who were keeping themselves busy, she looked toward the reception desk and saw a black bag sitting on the side of the desk, in plain sight and next to one of the desk attendants. She thinks, "Oh, I wonder if that's what Professor Hawthorne is talking about."
As she nears the last of the seating area, she notices a guy who's sitting alone at a table playing on his phone. The volume is up on his phone, that's probably what caught her attention. And Lily can see that he's playing a video game. She also notices that he's acting fidgety, looking up toward the reception desk, and then looking down at his game every few seconds. As she walks by him, she looks down at his table. This guy has his arms outstretched on the table and holding his phone and playing a video game. Lily notices that the guy has a tattoo on his wrist. The tattoo is of a cross with two small dots above the cross. She doesn't think much about it and then keeps walking towards the reception desk. All of a sudden, her phone rings. She looks down and sees that it's Professor Hawthorne. So she stops and answers it.
As soon as Lily answers her phone, Hawthorne asks, "Is there something at the reception desk? Sorry to rush you, but it's a little time sensitive."
Lily, now walking a little slower toward the reception desk because she was on the phone, gets a little closer and then responds to Professor Hawthorne's and says, "Yeah, there's a black bag sitting there, and it looks like a note is on it. However, I can't read it from where I'm standing."
"Okay, great," Hawthorne replies and then continues, "Don't pick it up. We'll be there in the next 10 minutes or so, as we just caught a shuttle. David can be the one to pick up the black bag. You can go be with the students while you wait for us to arrive." Before Hawthorne hangs up, he asks one more question. Just out of curiosity, he asks, "Oh, by the way, and before I hang up, you didn't happen to see anything or anybody that seems out of place, like they don't belong there?"
Right when Professor Hawthorne asked Lily that question, she immediately thought about the guy who was sitting by himself and playing his video game on his phone. He didn't look like the other tourists. He wasn't wearing the same types of clothes the other tourists were wearing, and he seemed quite anxious and nervous about something. He also had an interesting tattoo on his wrist. Lily responded back to Hawthorne as she started to walk back to where the students were still sitting. Lily responded, "There's this one guy I walked by. He's alone and acting a little off. He doesn't really fit in as a tourist or museum worker. He is sitting at one of the tables closest to the reception desk. Oh, and I almost forgot this part. He's got a tattoo on his wrist. It's of a cross with two dots above it. I thought it was interesting, as I've never seen one like that before."
Just as Lily said that last thing, the shuttle bus arrived to pick up Hawthorne's group and several other tourists who were also waiting at the bus pickup spot in the park's main parking lot. Hawthorne made it a point to follow right behind David as the group loaded onto the shuttle bus. Hawthorne sat down next to David in one of the open seats and then said, "Lily, we have a development. Don't approach that guy. We'll be there soon, so hang tight with the students." Hawthorne hung up the call with Lily and then said to David, who was sitting next to him on the shuttle bus, and said, "David, didn't you say that the guy at the museum, the guy Ava caught on camera that night at the gala, had a tattoo of a cross with two dots on his wrist, and that you recognized it?"
David, with a puzzled and concerned expression on his face, answers, "Yes, why?"
Hawthorne answered, "As Lily was going to see if there was something waiting at the reception desk for you, she walked past a suspicious-looking guy and noticed he had that same tattoo on his wrist."
David then says, "Okay, I guess that's to be expected. So they have another lookout posted by the reception desk to see who comes to pick up the J-jar they promised to give us?" He continues, "I'll go in and pick up the black bag. The rest of you go in first and then spread out. I'll come in last and go directly to the reception desk. The lookout will see me and then hopefully call back to his people to let them know I picked up the J-jar."
Hawthorne then replies, "Okay, we'll hang tight in the meantime. There's plenty of tourists around so we can blend in." As the shuttle bus enters the parking lot of the Grand Museum and as they all exit, Hawthorne and David share the plan with Miranda, Ava, and Tommy. The young park ranger then informed the group that he was heading directly over to a supervisor's office so they could then call the provincial police to get them involved. Hawthorne, Miranda, Ava, and Tommy all enter the Grand Museum together, avoid walking by the reception desk, and then spread out among the tourists that are mingling around in the food and market court area. David was going to wait about 10 minutes and then come in by himself and go right to the reception desk to pick up the bag. While Hawthorne and the others were pretending to blend in as tourists, Hawthorne noticed the guy Lily described on the phone sitting at a table still playing a game on his phone. He looked up every once in a while toward the reception desk, just like Lily had described. Hawthorne thought, this has to be the guy. Hawthorne then walked over to be close to where Tommy and Miranda were, Ava having already found Lily and the student some distance away and was sitting and talking with them. Hawthorne then said to Miranda and Tommy, what do you think?
Tommy says, let's wait and see what happens. We can always alert one of the on-site security guards. I'll put money on it. That guy was one of the guys at Gaia event the other night. Taller, thin, and has the same tattoo on his wrist. I mean, he fits the image Ava has of him on her camera.
Well, Prof Tommy, you'd win the bet because that is 100% the guy at the gala event. He's probably the one who knocked out Mr. Garcia, Miranda says.
As David was waiting to enter the Grand Museum, he texted a number of the person who was holding his brother, hoping to call their bluff. He wrote, as soon as I pick up the jade jar and it's confirmed, and you release my brother and confirm he's released, I'll tell you the exact location of the cenote where I found the golden mask. Please text back confirming you agree. David waited for a moment and then saw the text response say, agree. Wow, that was fast, David thought to himself. So, David waited another few minutes and then walked through the front doors of the Grand Museum and directly over to the reception desk. He immediately saw the black bag just sitting there with the note attached. He then politely asked the receptionist if he could look at the note. He looked at the note, then showed the receptionist his photo ID with his name and picked up the bag. The bag was heavy for its size and seemed to feel correct. However, David was not the one who discovered and studied this artifact. Miranda was that person and she was somewhere among the tourists standing by. David also noticed that the zippers were zip-tied, so the only way to unzip the bag and look inside was to cut the zip ties. He assumed this was done to keep prying eyes from doing so. He reached into his side pants pocket, out of habit, to grab his favorite small folding pocket knife, the one he takes with him just about everywhere, and nothing, it wasn't there. Then he remembers that he left it back in Mexico City because they flew to Merida instead of driving. He thinks to himself and asks the receptionist for a pair of scissors.
Maria is getting antsy. She knows that the cartel member, the one that drove them to Chichen Itza, is waiting for a location of a cenote. She feels a sense of relief that they can finally hand over the guy they have had to keep quiet and alive and who's been stuck in the trunk for almost 3 hours. She doesn't want this guy to die. After all, he was their getaway driver after Carlos and Renata stole the artifacts from the big gala a few nights back. He was also much more friendly than the jerk cartel member who has been giving them commands all day, mostly to do what they're told. Maria turns around in the car and says to Renata, who is half asleep in the backseat of the car and says, shouldn't be much longer now. We are just waiting for the location of the cenote. We think the guy's brother, the guy in the trunk, his brother, just picked up the black bag from the reception desk. Now, hopefully he won't open it right now.
Gosh, I hope so, Maria, Renata says with a tired slur. We've been waiting forever in this hot car.
Maria then responds, yeah, I'm ready to get out of this heat. Imagine how the guy in the trunk feels. All of a sudden, the cartel member looks over at Maria, gives her a thumbs up, and tells her to get rid of the guy in the trunk. He also tells her and Renata to get out, and they will have to find their own way back to Mexico City. He gives Maria some cash and then tells her to hurry so he can leave. Maria then tells Renata to get out of the car and to help her get the guy out of the trunk. The driver pops the trunk, and Maria looks into the trunk at the guy who is just laying there, not moving.
Both Aunt Maria and Renata are now standing over the back of the trunk, lid open and looking at the guy just laying there. Renata then asks, is he dead?
Maria responds, I don't know. Then she says, pour some water on his face from your water bottle. Maybe he's just passed out.
As soon as Renata poured some water onto the guy's face and head, he bolted up in a sitting position and asked where he was. It startled Renata so much she let out a faint scream and stepped back a few steps and then said, oh, thank God goodness, we thought you were dead. The man shook his head, not really knowing what to say next.
Maria then said, get out of the trunk. You're free. Go over to the Grand Museum. You can get some food and water over there.
Maria then points at a large building close to them and then says, "Those are the main doors. You can go in over there." The man climbs out of the trunk and starts walking slowly toward the Grand Museum building some 100 yards away. Maria then looks at Renata and says, "Thankfully, we are parked in the shady part back here. Otherwise, I'm not sure that guy who would have made it another hour in the trunk." At that moment, the cartel member who is still sitting in the driver's seat yells out the window and tells Maria to shut the trunk. Maria complies and shuts the trunk lid. All of a sudden, the car takes off, leaving Maria and her niece, Renata, just standing there all by themselves.
David, knowing that his brother probably could not last much longer, finally texts the number again and tells the person on the other side that the golden mask was found in the cenote at the bottom of inside of El Castillo. David also knew that it was only a matter of time before the other cartel member, the lookout, and the younger one that they had left in the pyramid were going to reconnect with the guy on the other side of this unknown number and probably find out that one of their own had probably drowned in the cenote and that he and his group had escaped. So, David took the gamble, even though he had not been able to get the zip ties cut from the black bag and look inside.
Hawthorne, who was still mingling around close to where Tommy was, started noticing some museum security guards walking through the food court and market area in the direction of the reception desk, where David was still standing.
Tommy walked closer to where Hawthorne is standing, next to a small t-shirt vendor display, and then says, "James, are you seeing this? Those guys are headed towards David."
Almost at the same moment, Miranda shows up next to Tommy and Hawthorne, not really caring if they are seen together, and then says, "Do you think they are after David?"
Hawthorne then says, "I'm curious about that guy." He then softly points at the loner sitting by himself who keeps looking up towards David and then back down at his phone. The tall, thin guy is acting nervous and anxious about something. Hawthorne continues, "From this distance, it appears there is a tattoo on his wrist, though it's hard to make out what it is. However, Lily said it was a cross with two dots above it, which would match with Ava's photo proof."
Miranda steps forward a bit closer to try and see if she can get a better look at the tattoo on the guy's wrist. She notices that he receives a text, stops playing his video game, answers the text, and then looks up towards David, and then texts back. Interesting, Miranda thinks to herself. She looks back at both Prof. Tommy and Professor Hawthorne to see if they notice the same thing. They must have, as they were both moving closer to where she was now standing. The security guards, now four of them, were walking very slowly. Miranda could tell that their attention was not on David. She felt a sense of relief. She noticed their attention was now on the guy playing on his phone.
Tommy says softly to Hawthorne and Miranda, as he watches the same thing unfolding, "Well, maybe our little park ranger friend is coming through for us now." The security guard looks serious, even though they can only carry stun guns.
Hawthorne replies, "Let's hang back and see what happens." All of a sudden, they see David a short distance away from where the guy is on his phone, sitting at the table looking up and walking toward another guy coming at him. Hawthorne, Tommy, and Miranda see David give the guy a big hug and then say a bunch of stuff to him. None of them could make out what David was saying, but knew that the other guy had to be David's brother by the reaction they were witnessing. At this same time, Hawthorne, Tommy, and Miranda were also watching what was going on with the security guards and the mysterious guy at the table Lily had alerted them to. The three of them were like spectators watching two scenes play out a mere 30 feet away as tourists and vendors walked about, oblivious to the upcoming action that was about to happen. The security guards were closer now to the guy who was still sitting down at the table looking down at his phone. There was one table, a few chairs, and two tourists between the four security guards and him. All of a sudden, the man at the table stopped his game and glanced up toward David. And then it happened.
Carlos was tired of playing his video game and was tired of babysitting this black bag which had the rock in it. He was still convinced that the plan with the rock was not going to work. These people were way smarter than that. He had come to a place where he really didn't care anymore at this point. He was just hoping to get their final payout from their heist back in Mexico City. He hadn't been paying much attention to the reception desk area after texting his Aunt Maria. His aunt watched him to wait there and confirmed two things before he was able to leave and come join them outside further down the road, where she had secured them a taxi ride back to Merida. First, he needed to see if the guy who picked up the black bag was able to get inside of it, which, as Carlos could tell, he hadn't been able to cut through the zip ties on the zipper yet. Then, second, Carlos needed to watch and see if the guy they had put in the trunk of their car was going to walk in through the main doors and connect with the guy holding the black bag. As soon as the second thing happened, he could leave, hopefully unnoticed. Carlos had a secret he was proud of, and he was hoping his aunt and sister would be proud of him as well. There were two identical old gym bags in the back of the car on the floor. When Carlos and Renata had swapped out the rock for the jade jar, they put the jade jar in one of the old gym bags, and Carlos had put some other rocks in the other old gym bag. Well, when Carlos got out of the car to go stake out the reception desk in the museum, he grabbed the old gym bag with the jade jar and took it with him. He left the other old gym bag in the back seat on the floor, the one with the rocks in it. Renata didn't even see him doing all of that. He was pretty proud to have fooled all of them.
Hawthorne, Tommy, and Miranda were nervously watching both scenes in front of them. They were bystanders, just standing there and waiting for something to happen. What were the security guards going to do with the guy at the table? How was David and his brother going to react?
All of a sudden, the thin, tall guy who was just sitting at the table playing on his phone stands up abruptly and looks towards where David and his brother are standing and talking. The table guy then bends over, grabs something, maybe a bag, from the chair that was sitting next to him. The bag he grabbed was out of sight, so it was a bit alarming for him to stand up quickly and grab the bag, almost in a threatening way. This all happened in a quick set of movements, which triggered Miranda into defense mode. All she saw was this stranger bend over and either reach into an old bag or grab the bag. This made her think of the worst possibility. Before she knew what had happened and why, she yelled out, "David!" She said it loud enough that most of the tourists and shop owners in close proximity to her, Professor Hawthorne, and Prof. Tommy all stopped and looked over at her. So did David and his brother, some distance away. So did the tall and skinny Mexican guy who was now standing up straight and looking directly at her, as if to say, "Who are you?"
Hawthorne watched as David and his brother stood still while looking over at Miranda, then over at a guy Miranda was pointing at. The guy was holding an old, worn-out sports bag in one hand and his cell phone in the other. Hawthorne then noticed that the guy then turned his attention away from Miranda, turned his head slightly more to the left, and was then staring directly into the eyes of the museum security guards, all four of them. Most of the people around their general location were now sitting or standing still and waiting and watching to see if a confrontation was about to erupt between the security guards and the guy whose attention they were on.
Carlos felt trapped, a little nervous and unsure of what he should do. There were four security guards looking at him. Carlos knew he could take them all on at one time if he had to and win. He was confident in his ability to fight. He was skinny and tall, but he was scrappy. He'd been in street fights before and usually came out on top because his opponents would underestimate his survival ability. So he stood there, waiting for the four losers to make the first move. He slowly slipped his mobile phone in his pocket and then gripped the old gym bag even tighter. Carlos yells out to the security guys, "Are you guys just going to stand there?" Then, without hesitation, one of the security guards pulls out a non-lethal taser. That's when Carlos, who had been tased before, decides not to hang around any longer. He pushes the table he'd been sitting at towards all four of the guards, grabs a chair, and throws it at them, and then turns around and sprints towards the front main doors. Carlos knows that if he can get outside, he can probably outrun them, meet up with Maria and Renata, and then get away.
David watches as the security guards lunge forward, stumble around the table and chairs, but cannot get to the guy they were standing by fast enough before he was running toward the front main doors his brother had just walked in through. This kid, the one the security guards were now trying to run after, was fast. David knew that there was no security guards who were going to catch him. Three of the guards were overweight and were already starting to show signs of fatigue. And the fourth guard looked to be in his late 50s or early 60s. As the tall skinny guy ran past David and his brother David saw, clear as day, the tattoo on the guy's wrist. As the security guys were now getting closer to where David was standing, looking disheveled and fatigued already, David turned and ran after the guy right out the front doors.
Miranda, Hawthorne, and Tommy fast walked toward the front main doors and watched as David ran after the guy through the parking lot and then chased him onto a small patch of sand and grass, which was close to the museum's property line. They all watched as David caught up with the guy and then tackled him, football style, onto the grassy area just off the side of the parking lot. The four security guards were not far behind, huffing and puffing as they approached the two men who were now struggling together on the ground. At that point, Miranda started running toward them, with Professor Hawthorne and Professor Tommy falling behind her. They all watched as two of the four security guards got closer to where David and this other guy were, still wrestling together on the ground. The two guards had their tasers out and pointing at the two men on the ground rolling and then pulled the triggers. Four darts with wires streamed out from the two guns. One struck David and the other three darts and wires struck the guy David was trying to subdue. The thin, tall guy David had in a headlock immediately went stiff, bit his tongue, and then went limp as the volts from the stun incapacitated him.
David, kneeling down and holding the guy he was chasing in the sleeper headlock, felt the shock of both stun guns as well. He fell to the ground right next to the other guy who was completely unconscious. David did not lose consciousness. As David lay there, he looked over at the other guy whose eyes were closed and laying there, right next to him. He was breathing heavily and had a pleasant look on his face, like he just fell asleep for his afternoon siesta. David watched as the security guards who had just tased them were now zip-tying the unconscious guy's hands and feet. David then sat up, trying to shake off the fact that he was just unintentionally tased, notices Miranda, Professor Hawthorne, and Prof. Tommy arriving on the scene and asking if he was okay.
As Miranda, Tommy, and David were talking with the security guards, all four of them were now on the scene. Hawthorne picked up the old sports bag that the guy had dropped when David tackled him. The object in the bag was heavy, so Hawthorne opened the bag, and what do you know? To his surprise, there in the old smelly sports bag was the jade jar. Hawthorne quickly zipped the bag back up just as the provincial police showed up in one of their trucks with lights flashing. Hawthorne slowly retreats from the scene, bag in hand, and stands a short distance away. He watches as the provincial police question the security guards, then David, then Miranda, and Tommy. By this time, the guy who David had tackled, they'd come to find out later that his name was Carlos Emmanuel Rodriguez. Well, he was somewhat awake now and talking. Hawthorne watched as he was put in the back of the police truck to wait. One of the police officers pulled out a utility knife from the truck and then cut the zip ties on the black bag that was sitting on the ground where David had dropped it right before tackling the guy. The police officer reached into the bag, pulled out a heavy object, wrapped a newspaper, looked at it, then removed the newspaper to reveal just a rock. Hawthorne thought to himself as he looked down at the old sports bag he was carrying and then said to himself, "Well, luck has looked down on us twice today, and the secret Mayan treasure location is still a secret."
Renata exhales and yawns and then asks, "Aunt Maria, how much longer do we have to wait?" She says this as she leans against the side of the taxi. She and her aunt have been waiting for well over 30 minutes for Carlos to meet them there so they can all get a ride back to Merida.
Maria looks up at Renata. She too is getting a little frustrated and irritated that Carlos hasn't met them yet. Maria answers Renata, "He'll be here. We just need to wait." No sooner did she say this when they see a police truck coming toward them on the road, obviously leaving the park. It all happened in slow motion. As Maria and Renata watch the police truck drive by, they smile at the two police officers sitting in the cab and notice that there's someone sitting in the back bed of the truck. Maria and Renata lock eyes with the person as the truck drives by. It's Carlos.
And that ends part 7. Stay tuned for next week as we bring you part 8 in our continuing story, Legends of the Yucatan. As we end this episode, we want to thank you for joining us for this important conversation about navigating college financial aid. We hope today's insights help you make informed decisions and feel more confident about your next steps. Remember, planning early and staying informed can make all the difference. And make sure you join us next week as we bring you part 8 in our continuing adventure story, Legends of the Yucatan. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.